This is an ABC podcast.
Sharing a Pacific morning on ABC Radio Australia.
Talofa. My name is Talia Olatia, and this is Pacific Mornings on ABC Radio Australia. Now, are you a fan of the round ball game soccer, or football as it's known in some circles? Well, if you are, then I don't have to tell you that the 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup is currently underway in France. But did you know that there's a groundbreaking pilot project for women's sport, which means that three female sports journalists from the Pacific are there as commentators?
Netherlands inside law, 3-3 blow New Zealand, but the missed ball, Hemi throw in blow New Zealand.
It's part of the Women in News and Sport, or the WINS program, which is funded by the Australian Department of Foreign Trade and Affairs and is being run under the watchful eye of ABC alum Aaron Carney. I was lucky to talk to one of the commentators, Vanuatu's Adette Willier, who is in France, about what she's doing over there and what the experience has been like so far. You'll hear that interview coming up on Pacific Mornings. And also, talking of sport, later on in the program, you're going to hear about the efforts to greenify Samoa ahead of the Pacific Games in July. The plan is that they're going to offset the carbon emissions by planting a whole lot of trees.
Samoa has a national target of about 2 million trees to be planted. We're encouraging native species, native plants. We're not encouraging the athletes or any member of the public to be planting invasive species. So The species that we're making available in Samoa through the Ministry of Natural Resources and Environment are native species only.
2 million trees. I hope that there are a lot of people in Samoa with a green thumb. But next, you're going to hear about the tourism efforts being made in the Solomon Islands.
Pacific Mornings
on ABC Radio Australia.
Now, the Solomon Islands might not be on everyone's holiday bucket list, but it has won fans in high places. Clark Gayford, aka the first bloke of New Zealand, has visited the islands twice and has plans to return again and loves to sing its praises. But his endorsement comes as the latest tourism figures reveal the recent election hurt visitor numbers. Anthony Stewart explains.
The first bloke of New Zealand is a big fan of the Solomon Islands.
I've been there twice now, and it has that element of nature and just that wild element and people that are still connected with their culture.
Clark Gayford there, speaking on the Trip Notes podcast. The husband of New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinta Ardern is also a TV host.
You still feel like you're having a proper adventure when you're going there. It doesn't feel sanitised. It feels a little edgy. And yet you'll pop out somewhere and there'll be this cool little resort somewhere, and it'll be a room on a building over water with, and you'll look over your balcony and there'll be giant clams and GTs and trevally swimming past, and you sleep under a mattress with a mosquito net, and the owner's lovingly folded towels into the shape of a swan and put little squares of soap in your shower with its curtain. And it's a proper adventure when you go there. I really love it.
The latest episode of his fishing show was just released in New Zealand, showcasing the fishing, diving and culture of the Solomon Islands. The head of Tourism Solomon Islands, Joe Tomato, says the endorsement is a win.
We were just overjoyed that he wanted to come over to the Solomons, and this is his second time. And in terms of all the production that he has done, and he's really been a champion for the Solomons in terms of travel and just being positive about the destination. Eh? So he has been a great asset to the country.
The praise comes at an important time for the nation's fledgling tourism sector. New figures show that in the first quarter of this year, tourist numbers dropped by more than 11,000. It's partly a result of this year's election.
The numbers for the Solomons for the first quarter has actually been a challenge. And that has basically been basically because of the preparation for elections. Eh? Although people do not travel during election time. So we had quite a big impact on the travel side. I don't think that it's a dangerous place. because there was when we had a little trouble here in April, immediately after, 2 weeks later, there was about 100 doctors and divers from all over the world that came to the Solomons. So I was just saying that how can these crazy people be coming to the Solomons if it is dangerous? So that's basically, you know, my position and my view, and basically to try and talk to the people that, you know, Solomons is a wonderful country that, you know, that they should consider for their travel itinerary.
About 25,000 tourists visit the Solomon Islands each year, with just under 38% of visitors coming in from Australia. The aim is to increase that number to 30,000 visitors a year.
And it's all about word of mouth and, you know, talking. We don't have that much budget to be able to do television and other big-time marketing, yeah? Because I still feel that we still need a lot more rooms before we move on to those into that space.
With an ambassador like Clark Gayford, it seems an achievable goal.
We were travelling by longboat between the Western Province and Giza. It was quite a long trip, and we're just cruising along, and the guy on the boat goes, "Oh, that's Skull Island over there." And I said, "Excuse me, Skull Island?" He said, "Skull's on that island." I said, "Can we go and have a look?" And he went, "Oh, okay." Yeah, so he takes us over, and we get off on this boat. There's no sign. There's no footpath that says you must not touch or any of that sort of sanitisation that comes with so many tourism experiences. And it's this little atoll that looks like a picturesque atoll, as you would expect. And you get off this boat and you walk up, and there are literally skulls all over this island. In fact, there's still coral slabs that they used to sacrifice all of their war treasures. Yeah. And the skulls there still have the coral necklaces of all the tribesmen hanging around them. And they're just all through the bush and things growing through them. And you're sitting there going, wow, this is incredible. And it's those little moments that lend itself to feeling like it's so much more than just going to a resort and getting sunburnt.
The first bloke of New Zealand there, Clark Gayford, ending that report by Anthony Stewart.
ABC Radio Australia.
Sharing a Pacific morning.
My name is Talia Olatia, and you are listening to Pacific Mornings here on ABC Radio Australia. Like I said earlier, coming up, we're going to talk to one of the commentators from the Pacific who is there covering the 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup. So I thought a little World Cup-inspired music is in order. This is one of my favourite World Cup songs. It comes from 2009, where the Men's World Cup was played in Dubai. It's Waving Flag by Kanan and David.
Take the field now, unify us, make us feel proud.
En las calles, muchas manos levantadas, celebrando una fiesta sin descanso. Los países como hermanos,
canta y une tu voz, grita fuerte que te escuche el sol.
El partido ya va a comenzar, todos juntos vamos a ganar.
Seremos grandes, seremos fuertes, somos un pueblo, bandera de libertad. Que viene y que va, que viene y que va, que viene y que va, que viene y que va.
When I get older, I will be stronger, they'll call me freedom, just like a waving flag. So wave your flag, now wave your flag, now wave your flag.
Pero unidos a intentarlo.
In the streets our heads are lifting, and we lose our inhibition. Celebration, it surrounds us. Every nation all around us,
sing forever. beneath the sun. Let's rejoice in the beautiful game, and together at the end of the day, we all say,
seremos grandes, seremos fuertes, somos un pueblo, bandera de libertad. Que viene y que va, que viene y que va, que viene y que va, que viene y que va.
When I get older, I will be stronger, they'll call me freedom, just like a waving flag. So wave your flag, now 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 wave your flag.
A good song. That was Kanan and David Bisbal there with the Spanglish version of the song Waving Flag, because Adele Willier, the Vanuatu commentator, is over at the Women's World Cup waving the Vanuatu flag, and you'll hear from her coming up on Pacific Mornings.
Big ideas on Radio Australia.
Driverless cars are currently being trialled in every Australian state and territory. It's early days, and we're a long way from a future where autonomous vehicles rule. But the technology's developing fast. So why choose autonomous vehicles? Just because we can, should we?
Casting light on some of the big issues and challenges of our time.
A recent report by McKinsey & Co. predicts the winners and losers from automation and artificial intelligence.
On average, we'd see over the next decade or so, around 25% of jobs in the most likely scenario not required. Some industries will be hit harder than others. Transport and manufacturing, which will be increasingly automated.
And discussing age-old questions.
Do animals have emotions? This question is hotly contested.
Be part of the conversation with Big Ideas on Radio Australia.
My name is Talia Olatea. You're listening to Pacific Mornings. Now we're going to find out what stories are making news across the Pacific. And to do that, we're joined by Anthony Stewart. Hello, Anthony.
Good morning, Talia.
Now, first up, I love an animal story. So I really love this one because we're going to go to Samoa, where there are plans to build a zoo, but it's not being celebrated by everyone, which, you know, everyone loves animals. So why this reaction?
Yeah, so the government has agreed to give land for Samoa to open its first zoo. The Prime Minister Tuilepi Salele has confirmed that the government's decision, and he said in his weekly media briefing that he has, that Bruno Zoo will be built. But obviously there are people who are concerned about zoos. Zoos in a lot of places are now considered outdated because of the way they treat animals, the small enclosures and things like that. And the Animal Protection Society president, Dr. Joan McFarlane, has said animals in a zoo live a life of suffering, and there's not adequate care in Samoa yet to provide a zoo. There's just one paid veterinarian in Samoa, the Minister of Agriculture and Fisheries Livestock Veterinarian, Dr. Renee Avi Malomoto Orange. The Animal Protection Society does engage one other volunteer vet, Dr. Harriet Thornton, but obviously not enough vets perhaps to be keeping large numbers of animals.
To make sure that the animals are all right. I did see a news story the other day. I was just trying to Google to find it, but my Google wasn't fast enough, about a zoo where it was an animal rights thing, but they did like a zoo where all the animals were holograms to be, and so that people could interact. So obviously the thing was about the thing that they were saying is this is the only way to have a humane zoo is if the animals don't actually exist and that people can still go along.
But I thought, like, you know, the Western Plains Zoo, those open plains zoos where the animals sort of live in semi-native areas and can roam around,
they're
maybe not
chilling.
As big as their giant expanse, like elephants, you know, migrate over thousands and thousands of kilometres, so you can't replicate that in a zoo.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing that caught my interest about this story is Bruno Zoo. Is he the one who, remember, so in PNG back in the 80s and 90s, there was a zoo that came to town. The ringmaster was Bruno, but then he was forced to leave PNG and in doing so left all his animals there. And so it was like monkeys. I'm pretty sure that there was a lion that was left in PNG. And then they effectively had to bring in a law that says that you couldn't, like, big animals couldn't come to PNG for fear that people would leave their animals there. Like, it was actually insane. Like, the people of PNG had to find food for these big wild animals. I don't know if it is the same person, but God, it'd be interesting if it was.
I haven't been able to confirm that, but it is the name of the person who is setting this zoo up is Tupé Bruno Loyal. And he's told a local newspaper that he's agreed to build the first zoo. It will have zebras, camels, and beautiful birds from all around the world. That's his plan. The lease
it's going to be pretty big. To cage all those animals.
They've said that they've got 5 acres to build this zoo. So that's actually that's kind of small.
It's small. Look, we're going to have to, obviously, there's going to be a lot more developments with this story. And so we'll follow it and we'll see if it is the same guy from PNG, because that would be interesting if it was.
I think tomorrow we might try and dig a bit deeper and get you the full details on this zoo in Samoa.
Indeed. Now let's go to Vanuatu, where the Daily Post is reporting a diplomatic stoush involving a French warship, which may have cost a small island community a new school. What does a warship have to do with a school? Like, presumably you'd want those two very separate.
So this is a very interesting story. The Post is reporting that Vanuatu's government denied a French warship a request to anchor at Aneityum Island. It was heading there as part of Operation Castor, which has been held every year since 2002. As part of that operation, the French military builds and renovates buildings in Vanuatu, and they've built classrooms and clinics, and that's what they'd been set to do. The boat was actually full of materials ready to be put onto this island. The school kids had even packed up and moved to tents because this was going to be such a...
They were ready for it. So why did Vanuatu block it? That sounds like a good thing.
Yeah, there's no official word, but it's likely connected to the ongoing dispute over the Matthew and Hunter Island, which is just basically an uninhabited rock in the middle of the Pacific. But it's disputed territory with the French laying a claim to it since 2007, and Vanuatu and the actual residents of Aneityum Island saying that they've had a long connection to the island. In January, a French naval mission went to the small uninhabited island and painted a French flag on a rock.
Oh.
And since then, there have been ongoing diplomatic tensions between Vanuatu and France.
So it's never just a classroom. There's always some form of geopolitics involved somewhere.
Exactly.
And finally, Anthony, archaeologists have discovered humans have been smoking pot for almost 2,500 years. That's pretty huge. It's been 420 for a while, it seems. What do we know?
Yep. So humans have been smoking cannabis as part of ritualized burial ceremonies for 2,500 years, according to the latest evidence unearthed from Western China. The archaeologists found traces of cannabis in wooden pots exhumed from tombs in Western China. They found the find provides the earliest evidence to date of cannabis being smoked for its psychoactive properties. It appears the cannabis was an important part of the burial rites of people in this region, so they were effectively locking themselves in a hut and burning a lot of cannabis. The study also showed that the pot contained a very high level of THC, much higher than one would find in wild cannabis plants. So it also suggests that they were cultivating the marijuana plant for this exact purpose.
This is serious. I wonder what munchies would have been like back to, like all that time ago. Like, what were they eating afterwards? What was going on?
Because I got high. Because I got high. That song just came to mind.
Oh, damn. If it was readily there, we would have played it. But, oh, man, imagine being an archaeologist and going to work and being like, guess what I discovered today?
But, I mean, what I want to know is what made the archaeologists test for THC? Was maybe they found a plant and then identified it, but it just seems like it wouldn't be the first thing you think you'd be, you're like, I found this beautiful burial site, look at these beautiful pots, and then you're like, let's test it for THC.
So the next time someone's smoking pot, you'd be like, no, it's not illegal. I'm just partaking in an age-old practice as being done for a while. Oh, well, Anthony, thank you for bringing us those stories today.
No worries, Talia.
That was Anthony Stewart there.
Pacific Mornings on ABC Radio Australia.
Now, Vanuatu's Adele Willier is in France for the FIFA Women's World Cup. But you won't find her on the field or in the stands. You'll find her in the commentary box.
Netherlands inside law, 3-3 blow New Zealand, but the limit ball, Hemi throw in blow New Zealand.
She is one of the three Pacific women who are bringing the 2019 Women's World Cup to the Pacific through live commentary in Indigenous languages. It's part of a world-first pilot project for women's sport. The women have been trained through the Women in News and Sport, or WINS, program under the watchful eye of Aaron Carney, and the program is funded by the Australian Department of Foreign Trade and Affairs. I spoke to Adele earlier this morning from France. Hello, Adele, or should I say bonsoir, because it's night time over there in France. Tell me about what you're doing over there.
Okay, thank you very much. Yes, it's evening. It's evening here in France. About the commentary, I would say it's a very, very big experience for me and La and Genesa. For me, it's my first time, and it's a privilege for me to be attending a live FIFA World Cup, especially for the women's, and see the crowd, how they cheer. Like when we are in our back in Vanuatu, and we are just watching the FIFA World Cup in television, and like we are talking about World Cup, but now we're actually in the real, we can see the real FIFA World Cup, how people cheer, how they support their teams and how they support their country and how they have traveled far and far away to come to Paris to support their fans. And talking about the commentary, like we've done last year for the OFC, and it's the qualifier for New Zealand to qualify for this FIFA World Cup. And it's just the quarterfinal between New Zealand and New Caledonia back in Nouméa. And it's a bit and a big difference here, because for the commentary back at the OFC, we just sit and look at the screen and then we talk, and then when finished, it's finished. But this one here, actually, we are looking at the real life match, and we are trying to get ourselves into that match, and the picture, it's like, yeah, like we're just like talking right now. It's like the real picture, and we're actually talking about the real picture and seeing real how people cheer and how other media from other countries are trying to, like, we're trying to do a competition. Like, at first, I was like nervous. I don't do the commentary. Jennifer to the commentary, and La to the analyst, and I am on the sideline. And at first, it was like I'm very, very nervous. But once I get into it for the first 20 minutes, I was like a bit nervous. But when it comes to 25, 30, 45, like I just go for with that. But it's a very good experience for me, and it's the first time to be at on a real match and at a real FIFA Women's World Cup, and it's my first time, and I'm very, very, very proud that me and Janessa and Lavinia, we have been Pacific sports ambassador, like, and I can say that like this, that we are very, very happy that we came all the way from the Pacific, from tiny, tiny small island in the Pacific, to all the way to Paris. And it's a very privilege for us to be part of this program, although it's a FIFA Code project program. And we are very, very thankful that we have that received that invitation to come here. And thanks once again to Aaron and Karen and for the WINS program, that through that program, they have been promoting us through the WINS program, and also the ABC for keep in track with us, and through the WINS program to OFC. And then from OFC, we have received invitation from FIFA to come here. And I must say again that the weather is summer here, but for us, the Pacific Islander, we are getting used to tropical weather. And it's very, very hard for me. Actually, it's very hard for me that this weather, I just can't control myself with this weather. But within this one whole week, I am trying to get used to the weather, but only because when it's night here and it's morning back in my country. So I'm trying to get myself to sleep and wake up early in the morning. But for the timing, I'm getting used to the weather and the timing.
Absolutely. What's been the highlight so far?
Oh, yes. For the highlights of the game, I must say that we are very proud that we are doing the commentary for New Zealand, and New Zealand is representing the Oceania. And for the highlight so far, from Lahave, the small town that we have been, we just traveled to from this morning to here, it's very, very, very crowd of the with the orange, the Netherlands fan. But before that, while we were in Paris, I can say that actually the women's team from France, when they beat South Korea with a score of 4-0. Back then, I can say that the spirit of World Cup, the male team that they have won the FIFA World Cup last year, and the spirit of the World Cup is still with France. And while they are hosting this FIFA World Cup again, and talking about the crap at the time, I can say that actually I'm not looking at the women's World Cup. It's like I'm looking back at the males FIFA World Cup, because they have that spirit. So far since last year, the men's team won the FIFA World Cup, and the spirit is still within them. So when you see the crowd, how they cheer and how they support the fans, it's like I'm watching the male are playing or the women's are playing, because the same support and the same cheer during the stadium when back last year when I was actually at the final, watching the final game between France and Croatia. It's like I'm watching the main male France team playing against Croatia for the final. And for me, I can say that France is highlighting the FIFA World Cup here. They are the hosting country, but I can say that I'm absolutely 100% that they have the spirit of World Cup. Since last year, the men's team won the FIFA World Cup, they still have that spirit of World Cup since last year.
And they're keeping it going. It sounds so great. Well, thank you so much, Adele, for joining us. I really appreciate it. You're such a great ambassador for Vanuatu and for the Pacific over there. So have fun.
Thank you very much. You're welcome.
A natural talker. You can see why she's in the commentary box. That was Adele Willier, one of the three Pacific women who are broadcasting across France for the 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup. The other two women in the program are Vanuatu's Janessa Hinge-Molly and Fiji's Lavenia Yalovi. And you can listen to their coverage in Bizlama and Italki Fijian languages, as well as in English, on the Oceania Football Confederation website.
ABC Radio Australia.
Sharing a Pacific morning.
My name is Talia Olatia, and you've been listening to Pacific Mornings on ABC Radio Australia. That's all for us for this half hour of the program. But when we come back in 30 minutes, you're going to hear about a new Samoan coming of age film. It's called Brown Boys.
You know, you take these guys off the island, you put them on a different island, and you throw all these other things in front of them. You throw girls, you throw alcohol, you throw a lot of, testosterone in there. And, you get a real crazy film.
I speak to one of the actors, Johnny Occostino, coming up on Pacific Mornings. And you'll also hear about the efforts to greenify Samoa ahead of the Pacific Games by planting, get this, 2 million trees. That is a whole lot of trees that are going to be going in the ground. Remember, if you want to listen back to any of the stories from today, just go to the ABC Radio Australia webpage. News is next, and then it is Pacific Beat with Catherine Grau. We'll be back in half an hour.
Pacific Mornings
on ABC Radio Australia.
Pacifica.
Sei malilosa, mo'oi mai le Pacifica.
Talofa. My name is Talia Olatia and you're listening to Pacific Mornings on ABC Radio Australia. Now, do you know when you book a flight and then the little box comes up asking you if you want to spend a few extra dollars to carbon offset your flight? Well, there are going to be a lot of people flying to Samoa for the Pacific Games in July. I mean, there's 5,000 athletes alone, and that's not including coaching teams, media and fans. That's a lot of people on a lot of flights. So in an effort to reduce the carbon footprint for the Games, the Secretariat of the Pacific Regional Environmental Program has a plan to greenify Samoa by planting a whole lot of trees. 2 million, in fact. You're going to hear all about it and what they hope it will achieve coming up on Pacific Mornings. Also, you're going to hear about a new Samoan movie out of New Zealand, which tells the coming-of-age story of six Samoan men. It's called Brown Boys. It's a drama, but of course, because there are Polynesians involved, there is a lot of laughs along the way as well. Johnny Occostino plays a bit of an oddball character in the movie. He thinks he looks like Jason Momoa because most guys wish they looked like Jason Momoa. And I spoke to Johnny about the film, which was made on a shoestring budget. You're going to hear all about it coming up on Pacific Mornings.
ABC Radio Australia.
Sharing a Pacific morning.
But it's Thursday, and on Thursday, I think the more music, the better. And we're pretty lucky because this song that I'm about to play, it's called Can't Let You Go. It's by the band One Tox, and it was actually submitted to me. Someone sent me an email and said, hey, this is a pretty cool song. Would you consider it playing it on your radio program? I listened to it and I thought, yep, that's exactly the kind of music we like here on Pacific Mornings. So this is One Tox with the song Can't Let You Go.
Doesn't mean that I would ever want to try.
What's wrong with all?
And I don't understand the fights we
have.
But if I saw it, if I meant to hurt you,
I just won't let go.
And I'm wondering if love can still live through the sadness and the pain I feel. But don't you ever worry, we can always make it through that. I know for me to let you go, girl, it's so impossible. Cause I can't let you go.
waters of the Rangwe, down in a river, the peace and the stand. I realize to you those lies I said, yeah, it was a mistake. Baby, I can't forget. So don't you ever worry.
What did you think of that? That was the Solomon Islands band One Tox featuring Turbulence there with their song Can't Let You Go. And if you are a musician in the Pacific and you have similar, you know, island reggae vibes, or let's be honest, if you're just a musician out in the Pacific, then you should definitely know about the new Island Music Program, which is coming to Radio Australia. It's going to be hosted by Rick Howe. And if you have a song that you would like to play on that program or this program Pacific Mornings, then we would definitely be keen to hear from you. You can send us an email. The email address is islandmusic@abc.net.au. That's islandmusic@abc.net.au. We would love to hear what you are doing in the music world over there in the Pacific.
You're listening to ABC Radio Australia.
There still is a very big part in world affairs to be played by diplomats. And if you limit those diplomats' abilities to do their jobs because of political considerations, whether it's the United States or anybody else, I think the whole world suffers because of that.
ABC Radio Australia.
One big thing that hopefully didn't escape anyone's attention.
For interesting discussions.
Apps get all the media attention, but actually the number one way that young people meet is through friends.
With interesting people.
I love the fact that you can be from a particular religious group and find someone. So you've got Salam Swipe, which is obviously for Muslim people. You've got J Swipe, which is for Jewish daters.
ABC Radio Australia.
Once there's a body of knowledge around those genes, people tend to gravitate towards working on those. A bit like looking under the lamppost for our lost keys at night, rather than sort of venturing out into the dark where it might be a little bit harder to find new information.
This is ABC Radio Australia.
Pacific Mornings
on ABC Radio Australia.
Well, in just under a month, 24 teams and 5,000 athletes from across the Pacific will descend on Samoa to compete in the Pacific Games.
We come from the greatest navigators the world has ever seen. And like the daring voyagers of the past, we engage in the same pursuit to go further, to go higher, faster, stronger. Samoa 2019 Pacific Games. Samoa, we on.
It's the third time that Samoa will be hosting the Games, but the first time that it's going to be greenified. Kosi Latu is the Deputy General Director of SPREP, the Secretariat of the Pacific Regional Environmental Program, and he says athletes and locals have been invited to plant native trees as a way to offset their carbon emissions.
Samoa has a national target of about 2 million trees to be planted. We're encouraging native species, native plants. We're not encouraging the athletes or any member of the public to be planting invasive species. So the species that we're making available in Samoa through the Ministry of Natural Resources and Environment are native species only.
Carbon emissions are the release of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere and are a big contributor to global warming. According to the United States Environment Protection Agency, 14% of global greenhouse emissions come from transport, and Mr. Latu says that the carbon emissions they want to offset stem from the travel the athletes take to get to Samoa.
I think the key message we want to convey to the athletes is that it doesn't matter whether it's emissions coming from ships, airplanes, you know, transport. Whatever you're doing that's contributing to emissions is part of the problem. And so we're encouraging them to think, you know, of the big picture.
But planting trees isn't the only way Samoa is attempting to keep the Games green and clean. They also have a national campaign aimed at picking up litter and encouraging people to move away from using plastic bottles.
We're addressing other issues of sustainability through making sure that we're reducing and, where possible, eliminate the use of plastic water bottles at the Games. And we're doing that by working with partners to make sure that the athletes and people will be using, you know, drinking from water refill stations within the various sporting venues.
Mr. Latu says that the Pacific Games is only the first step in a plan to encourage countries to greenify events all over the Pacific.
Whether it be national, regional, international meetings, that they start looking at greening these meetings. We just had a request from the government of Tuvalu to help them green the Pacific Island Forum Leaders meeting in Tuvalu in August. So we're just looking at how we can help Tuvalu to do that.
He says he hopes this initiative creates a legacy for the Pacific Games still yet to come.
You know, it's all about, you know, taking action that will help inspire other people to follow, but also get people to start thinking about changing their behavior. You know, it starts in the mind, and it's the change in mindset that will help bring about a change in people's habits, and that's something that doesn't happen overnight. And we want them to see themselves as champions when they go back to their home countries, whether they're athletes or not. We want them to take the message back.
That was Kosi Latu. He is the Deputy General Director of SPREP, or SPREP.
Pacific Mornings
on ABC Radio Australia.
A little bit more music. Look, why not? This is Lole Usolei with Tuilunga.
Matutu
Lole Usoalai with Tuilunga.
Pacific Mornings
on ABC Radio Australia.
Now, Sione's wedding three wise cousins, Hibiscus and Ruthless. If those three movie titles meant anything to you, then you're probably going to be excited to hear there's a new Samoan film on the block. It's called Brown Boys, and it's a drama/comedy coming-of-age film about six Samoan men in South Auckland. It's about brotherhood, romance, and growing up. And some of the Brown Boys cast are currently in Australia for screenings of the movie, and I spoke to one of the actors, Johnny Augustino, about the film and the character he plays.
This is what I want y'all to do for me.
Hi, I'm Johnny Augustino. I play the character Siake from the film Brown Boys, which is just coming out here in Melbourne on Monday.
Tell us about Brown Boys.
I guess what it's all about is really just about a group of guys that you'd probably see on your typical weekend out. You know, we all just happen to be cousins, family members. And we're trying, I guess, navigate the waters of, you know, love, friendship, trying to be a good son, trying to be a good brother, a good boyfriend, partner. You know, you put that all together and you send these guys out on a night out. And you just watch the story unfold and how we deal with all these issues that come up.
Sorry, 27. Still acting like a 17-year-old.
It sounds kind of like The Hangover, but like the Samoan Hangover, but with like, you know, some culture and identity thrown in there as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. I mean, that's probably one of the key themes that you see. I mean, you know, you take these guys off the island, you put them on a different island, and you throw all these other things in front of them. You throw girls, you throw alcohol, you throw a lot of, you know, testosterone in there. And, yeah, you get a real crazy film.
Now, the character you play is Siaki, and I love that the description is that he's a geeky weirdo.
You look like Jason Momoa. Tell me, I can hook you up with girls.
What was it that made you go, oh, geeky weirdo, I think I have this in my repertoire to play that character?
To be honest, I didn't pick that title. I think that was just given to me. The way I actually see him, he's more of a probably free spirit. So he's probably the free spirit out of the whole group. He's more or less the innocent one who's just, you know, just trying to be the best that he can for his brothers, his parents, and just, you know, whatever partner that he has.
And he also thinks that he looks like Jason Momoa.
Yeah, he also thinks he looks like Jason Momoa.
One of the things is about this character, he's called Plastic. Why is he called Plastic?
Okay, I think that's the reason why he's called Plastic is, you know, Siaki himself and that actual world isn't actually from New Zealand. He's kind of flown over from Australia. So he doesn't actually know how to speak Samoan, can rarely even understand it. But, you know, deep down inside, he knows that he's Samoan. And it's just one thing that I guess that's his struggle. That's that character's specific struggle and cultural identity, just, you know, just wanting to be accepted by his brothers and cousins as, you know, a real Samoan. But he can't do the main things like talk or understand it.
To be honest, it sounds like me. You're Samoan Australian. Does that storyline line up with your experiences, or were you just like, nah, mate, I know exactly what's going on?
No, it totally lines up. I mean, I go out with my my siblings and cousins and, you know, they're all off-speaking Samoan, and I'm, you know, it's that general conversation, everyone laughs, so I'll just laugh, you know, I don't really know what's being said, but I'll just laugh just to, you know, kind of blend in. So, yeah, it really resonated with me a lot, you know, what he's actually trying to achieve here in the story.
It's so funny because just even watching the trailer, I very much saw like my cousins and my brothers in it, which is really great. But it is like a drama and a comedy. So do you have to be Samoan or from the Pacific to get the jokes in Brown Boys?
No, you don't. I mean, I would say this is more leaning towards a drama, but there's some funny moments in there, which, you know, we use that to kind of help carry that message forward and what we want to send out with our film. And it doesn't actually have to, you know, go back to just being Samoan or any Pacific Island kid. The story can resonate with, you know, Asians, but, you know, any other culture out there, Lebanese, Italians, Turkish. And these are the kind of friends that I grew up with over here in Australia. So, yeah, I see a lot of just a lot of my mates in there, and they're not, doesn't have to even be Samoan. You can go out to any, I guess, McDonald's car park and you'll see a bunch of boys. And that's those characters there that we're putting up on screen.
Now, as you've described it, it does, like, you know, guys going out, drinking, having fun and all of that. Tell us the secrets on set.
You know, to be honest, on set, I never really kind of had that feeling of that I'm getting tired of this, you know, when's the time to go home? It was never like that, especially with the environment that Hans, our director, who also plays the character Peter, set up for us. It was a real family-orientated environment. And the reason why it was like that was because we didn't have the big budget to be able to, like, pull out all the professionals to come and help us out. So, I mean, you'd have Hans's mom just pretty much doing all the catering along with his partner and his sisters.
That probably made the food taste better, though.
Yeah, the food was really good.
But it was calling on a lot of family members to help out, was it?
Yeah, it was definitely a lot of love and support just from close friends and family. And, I mean, that's just the nature of, you know, low-budget films. You know, if we wanted to really tell the story without having any roadblocks in, you know, what we can do and what we can't, we had to go down that route of just, you know, self-funding, looking at investors, and also going up to our New Zealand Film Commission for a bit of assistance as well.
Now, it has already been released in New Zealand. What was the reaction amongst New Zealand audiences?
Well, we had a lot of positive feedback, positive reviews. A lot of people calling it a real bold move. A lot of, you know, some others coming out saying it's really taboo on a lot of the stuff that we touched on.
Why taboo?
Well, I think just in general, I think Samoan culture, you know, we always want to kind of, you know, portray ourselves in the best light, which is fine. But at the same time, I think we also need to be real with what our young ones are going through as well. And a lot of the struggles that they face. And that's what we really wanted to push in our film. So it's not going to be like any Pacifica film that you've seen come before us. This is probably, it's going to be more on the side of being an indie film where we didn't have to worry about what we were saying. But, in saying that, we had a lot of real heavy conversations on scenes, certain lines. So it wasn't like we just went in there and just, you know, all guns blazing and, yeah, hey, this is what we're going to do. We had a lot of heavy discussions around what our film was going to portray and what we wanted to do. So, you know, if it stuck, then, yeah, we went with it. But if it didn't, then we just cut it from the script. We didn't even, you know, some jokes were in there. Some jokes just didn't add to the story, so we removed it.
And it's those hard conversations that you have to have, isn't it? Because, yeah, obviously you don't want to be disrespectful, but then at the same time it's hard to please everyone all the time. So, you know, and the nature of a film is it is a creative process. So that completely makes sense. Now, as you said, that the film is going to be screening in Melbourne on Monday. Where else in Australia are you guys having screenings?
You know, we haven't really secured any other screenings, so, you know, we're just working from the ground up. It's our first time. We're over here now just trying to figure out how we get into the Australian market, how do we promote this film even. So we've got two screenings down in Melbourne, Fountain Gate, Sunshine on Monday, Village Cinemas. The only other one that we also had was up here at Liverpool Village Cinemas. But other than that, Melbourne seems to be the guys who are getting a majority of our screens.
That's because Melbourne kids are cool. She's broadcasting from Melbourne.
All right.
Well done, Melbourne.
Love you, Melbourne.
Yeah. But if people want to find out more about the film, website, Facebook page, where can they go?
Look, we've got our Facebook page set up. So if you just want to look up Brown Boys Film New Zealand, you'll be able to get in contact with us, see all the content that we're putting up there, all our trailers, interviews. If you want to reach out to us just like you guys did, that's the best way to do it. Instagram as well, same thing, Brown Boys Film NZ or Brown Boys Film 19. So that's our two social media platforms that we utilize the most.
Gotta love social media.
Oh, you know, hey, we didn't have to pay rent. That's how our whole marketing strategy was, just through social media. We didn't really have the budget to kind of pump out TV ads or put out, you know, posters up on buses or anything like that.
Well, let's be honest, most of the Pacific community are on Facebook and social media, so, like, it's probably more helpful to do it there rather than put it on a bus or, you know.
Our audience is all about data.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it sounds like a real treat, and thank you so much for speaking with me, Johnny.
Yeah, no worries. Hey, thanks for having me on the show.
That was Johnny Augustino from the new Samoa New Zealand film called Brown Boys. And like Johnny said, if you want more information about the film, just check out their Facebook page. You can find them at Brown Boys Film NZ.
Pacific Mornings
on ABC Radio Australia.
And that is all that we have time for on Pacific Mornings. But we'll be back again tomorrow to do it all again. And it's going to be Friday. So that's exciting. I will catch you then. This is Pacific Mornings. My name is Talia Olatia. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday.